Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast, the Super Bowl edition of it, because everyone just says the Super Bowl edition. But more importantly, before we get to the game, before we get to the fact that we have to do a quick pause for about 9 minutes, Bob, you just came here through Hoff. Your tauntaun is a piece of shit right now. How are you doing?
I'm okay. You know what I was thinking, Maddie? I was thinking to myself, Torontonians need higher standards. We're a hardworking, tax-paying bunch of freedom-loving folk. Mm-hmm. City Hall has to be better. It just has to be better. And then you think to yourself, well, what does that mean? And it always comes down to, what are you willing to do? I'm big in this what are you willing to do phase. You know, I look a lot at the states and I get frustrated because I see people go online and they text the most amazingly upset things about politics and then do nothing.
Yes.
And this drives me crazy. So I was thinking to myself, Matt, how do we, a basically peace-loving group, the Torontonians that we are, and we're very status quo-loving to boot, it may be more status quo than peace, to be perfectly frank, how do we, you and I, encourage people to not put up with bullshit and to make sure Toronto truly is a great city?
It's never going to happen, and I'm going to tell you why.
I'd love to know why.
And I hate doing declarative. You know, one thing I hate the anyone who says anything with like, this is 100%.
Matt, you work in sports talk radio.
Yeah, I know, but I do.
That's all it is one declarative statement after another.
I know, but I'm not good at that.
What are you talking about? You're only good at that when you really hate something.
Yeah, and that's like three things. And most of it's about Kevin Durant. Most of the time, I'm like, I'm here to listen to the other side. Like, I'm you know, but...
I interrupted you. So yeah. Why will it never happen? Why will Torontonians never have a TTC that works?
I'll tell you why, Bob. Because you know what? I saw a lot of rejoicing yesterday and today. I was on Moore in the morning with John Moore on Newstalk 1010. And even he was talking about it in a very positive way. Everyone's happy that the Eglinton LRT is here. And I was like, and there was a moment where everyone's like, Ford, you know, that might not be the worst thing to have an inquiry on. It took a decade or whatever late and over $1 billion. And now today everyone's just like, yay, it's here. And then we're all just going to move on. If everyone is just happy that the Eglinton LRT is here and we're already going to forget about, you know, the decade of bullshit, I worry about your very well-intentioned plea to the city of Toronto.
Matt, the Chinese put up high-speed rail that goes 200 miles an hour and connects an entire country. And we're happy because we have 30 blocks of billion-dollar slow light rail?
Yes. And by the way, you're right. I remember when I was in Japan, and yes, by anyone going, Japan is not China. I'm aware of that. When I was in another nation far from here, in Japan, it amazed me. It amazed me. Just the tunnels that didn't take that long to build and all this other stuff. Like, there's the other parts of the world are so much better than we are at all this stuff. It's infuriating.
Okay, so I lean left.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that we are the only part of the problem, but we are definitely part of the problem because we love committees.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't move forward until everybody agrees. And there's this horror, this people are aghast at the idea that one person in a 20-person committee might not like the result of what was decided. And that wouldn't be fair to that person. But you know what else wouldn't be fair? If that person held up something that was intended for millions of people.
It's one of the classic arguments about left versus right. You look at Gavin Newsom, the power player in California, and their high-speed rail is $20 billion in debt, and they haven't even laid a track. You know, when you see that, it's amazing. And by the way, I don't have the answers. I'm not a smart fella.
But here's the thing, Matt. If you're going to be the party of government, then your government has to work. I'm not saying the alternative is viable. It creates enormous income inequality. I'm not sure it produces even necessarily better results. But if you're saying I have a better plan, it has to be a better plan. And you have to get over the idea that it's sufficient to say, yes, but you're a bad person. We're both inefficient, but you're a bad person.
I agree.
So I'm sitting there on the streetcar and I'm thinking, I advocate all the time for what the Americans should do about their problems. And trust me, their problems are a lot bigger than their TTC is slow. So we're talking about pretty much apples and oranges. But I did think I'm a little bit pot calling the kettle black, you know, to a much lesser degree here, in that I don't expect Torontonians to have any standards. And that's, you know what, Matt?
But the problem is, what's the solution?
The solution is everybody boycott the TTC. Just don't go.
Then how? But then for a lot of people, how do they get to work? How do they get their medicine? How do they go grocery shopping?
But nobody, there is no progress without struggle. There is no progress without giving something up. You got to give up to get.
Then what is required is not only everyone boycott, but then there's got to be a pool of money that's got to be collected to help the infirm, to help people that do need, you know, to get around. People can volunteer to drive. Not you, maybe your daughter.
But not yet, but
not
soon.
Yet, but soon, but soon. Like, that's the thing, is to do this, you know, we're going to need everyone in it together. You know, like, it's easy for me. I can boycott the TTC, and I take it all the time. And I love the idea of it. I love the idea of anything to kick the ass of the TTC and Metrolinx and everything else that took the LRT forever. Like, Japan shames us every day. Mm-hmm. I remember joking, when I return from Japan, I'm going to wait at Pearson. I'm going to find where the next flight is coming in from Tokyo, and I'm going to have a sign saying, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Like, your life is just going to get much harder because of our public works.
It's not that Canadians don't have a high standard of living.
We do.
We do have a high standard of living. However, these things can go away. The high standard of living was created with a lot of hard work and sacrifice. It's the classic Jack Donaghy line about the first generation comes over here and with the sweat of their brow, they start a new life. And the second generation takes that momentum and they build something and they move forward. And the third generation takes that prosperity and takes improv classes and goes snowboarding.
Yeah, it's such a great line. Oh, my God.
Speaking of snowboarding, I want to talk about the Olympics and how astonishing snowboarding is as a sport. Can't believe anybody lives. But we should talk Super Bowl. It is the Super Bowl edition. All
right. Absolutely.
So here's the thing. I want to throw this out here. Not to be a negative Nelly, but I went into this completely honest with you and our audience. I didn't really care about the game. Didn't really care about the outcome. Yeah. And by the end of it, I can't say that I cared more or was particularly entertained. We'll get to Bad Bunny in a bit, but... Okay, so 29-13, the Seattle Super Seahawks.
Supersonics. Mutombo and Gary Payton. Great. Hey, the Seahawks are great defensively. Mutombo and
Glove.
Yeah.
Seattle wins. Look, I'm going to let you cook on this one because you're the football guy. You love football. Let's just start with the winners, okay? The Seattle D. Mm-hmm. Why was Seattle so able to completely stymie New England?
The nerdy side is first, left tackle rookie Will Campbell had his worst game as a pro. He got dominated early and often. Derek Hall, Devin Witherspoon, a bunch of other defensive players. Many of them were drafted from draft picks they got when they traded Russell Wilson to Denver. So that was the first part of it. I think Drake May got a little overwhelmed. Second youngest quarterback to ever perform in the Super Bowl.
Let's come back to Drake May in a second because he's his own category. I want to do categories of things. Because I'm interested in the Seattle D because by the end of it, you know, Chris Collinsworth and Mike Tirico were talking about how the story of the year really was defense. And it was the number one versus number eight defense. And it wasn't a particularly astonishing offensive year for any teams. And so it was. So do you look at this and think, okay, Seattle won with defense and a pretty good quarterback and a functional offense. It wasn't even that great towards the end of the year, but they had enough offense, a little bit like the 2000 Ravens.
Well, better than that. And also, we'll forget how good that offense was in the NFC Championship game against the Rams. They put up
but
like
even in the playoffs,
points.
They, you know, yeah, okay. So regardless,
I'm just saying the Seattle's offense. Gets overshadowed by the
defense. They did not win that Super Bowl because of their offensive talent.
No. Kenny Walker got the MVP. That's fine. But no, the defense is the number one football headline for why that game ended the way it did.
Okay, so Mike McDonald is the first Super Bowl winning coach to actually call his own defensive plays. It is a copycat league. Every league is a copycat league. the new template has been sent down there. It's not about Mike Martz and having the Cheesecake Factory offensive playbook of 10,000 options that you can call up at any time. You've got a defensive play caller who has a no-nonsense style and a balanced defense. It doesn't even have a star on it. It doesn't even have a Chris Jones or no real pass rusher that you go, ooh, that guy was so good. It's just a bunch of guys who are all good at their jobs. It's a no-nonsense D. Matt, is this the way of the league now?
Well, it's been the way of the league for the last 2 years because the biggest star of the Super Bowl was the general manager, John Schneider. Mm-hmm. Last year, the biggest star of the Super Bowl was Howie Roseman, the general manager of the Eagles. Jalen Hurts, by the way, in the Super Bowl win and his Super Bowl loss, put up great numbers. But those aren't the top elite quarterbacks. Certainly not Sam Darnold. So the lesson here is that you don't, maybe you're not spending $58 million on the quarterback. We'll see what's going to happen with Tua and Kyler Murray. And that you can use that money to have a more balanced team. But the thing is, you can say we're going to have a more balanced team. You still got to draft the right players.
Balance is really funny because it's a nightmare for teams to actually achieve because you have to make a lot of good decisions.
Exactly.
And it's so much easier to find one person who's great at their job and say, we're going to build around that person. I wonder if you actually did the analysis, and I would trust someone like you analyzing rosters. What is more common in the NFL, a star quarterback or an actually balanced offense and defense?
Star quarterback.
And think about how rare that is.
Oh, yeah. Well, it goes back to, hey, winning's hard. When Kansas City won their two Super Bowls against the 49ers, both games, it's like, well, who's got the more complete team? San Fran. Who's got the better team? San Fran. But that one has got Mahomes. All right, I guess we're taking Kansas City. Like, a lot of it just came down to that. And it didn't work in the Philadelphia Super Bowl. They got blown out by that point. But I think it still is more the elite quarterback makes up for the sins of bad drafts, you know.
So how many times do you think that defense blitzed yesterday? Do you know the number?
I was reading about it this morning that they blitzed a lot more than they had in the regular season and that Mike McDonald really ratcheted up in the first half where all New England did was punt. And then they started to lessen it in the second half when, you know, they have a 12-0 lead or a 19-0 lead. Then it's like, you know what? Keep everything in front of us. Drake May's not going to beat us.
They did so much rushing for. And New England did so little with that. And we can come back to that in a second. But one thing I did like about yesterday's game is I love when a plan comes together. This is a bit of the Hannibal Smith from the A-team. I love it when a plan comes together. It really was a coaching clinic on one side of the field. What Mike McDonald was able to do with Seattle, I can't remember the last time I watched something, maybe Andy Reid at his best with some of those KC wins, but where you just look at this and go, there is a higher functioning football mind going on here. And again, usually it comes down to crazy gadgetry and trick plays, and they went for 400 passing yards or whatever, but this really was just, we're going to take away all your options. They starved the New England Patriots out.
They did. Oh, yeah. It was everyone doing their job at a very fast level, you know, throughout. It was impressive. By the way, I'll give a shout out to New England's defense. The best player, you can argue the best player on the field was Christian Gonzalez, the cornerback for New England. By the way, that sentence puts you in a real hipster place when you're picking a cornerback for the losing team. No, actually, he was better than Kenneth Walker, who won the MVP.
Nah, but Chris Collinsworth couldn't stop talking about him, so it was thrown out.
Yeah, no, it was. It's true. It's a great point. But yeah, this was just an incredibly well-schemed defense. Everyone did their job. And you're right, there isn't that one star. Like, I have to remind myself, like, I know Devin Witherspoon, but then after that, I'm like, wait, who's that guy again? There isn't a Myles Garrett. There isn't a Ray Lewis. There isn't that one stud. What there is a whole lot of B pluses and some A minuses.
When you love a game, it is so fun to watch it played at a high level. And not necessarily by stars, but as a team. You know, we get this in hockey sometimes where the Florida Panthers, you watch it and you go, God, they just play so hard and they don't make mistakes. And there are no weak spots in the roster and they won two cups and they really deserve them. And the stars came out, yes, they made the plays they had to make, but they won because nobody was bad and everybody was good. And you know who that's bad for? Non-fans.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing says boring game quite like they played really well together.
Florida's first Stanley Cup win, Game 7 against Edmonton. The defining moment of Game 7 was the last 22 seconds. They just forechecked, and they wouldn't let Edmonton have the chance. Like that was so. What was the defining moment? That team just hit the other team a little bit harder, and that's it. And you're right. Last night's game for anyone who's like, I don't really care, but I guess I'll watch. Horrible game. Like that, I was bored by that game, and I'm a nerd. And it wasn't that I need more touchdowns. It's that the defensive excellence, which was excellent, there was also ineptitude. There was Darnold and there was May missing throws. There was offensive linemen just getting overwhelmed. Some of that is the defense was great, and some of it was a little bit of offensive ineptitude.
Is there anything else you want to say about Seattle before we move on to New England? Because New England's the more interesting team to talk about of the two teams, I think, for exactly the reason you're pointing out.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Well, the quick shout out to Sam Darnold, led the NFL in turnovers, didn't have a turnover in any of the playoff games.
It reminded me a little bit of Trent Dilfer, where your job was to just not fuck up so much that you ruined what the great defense was going to do.
Yeah.
Although I think Darnold was a better quarterback than Trent Dilfer. I'm just saying, when you look at the history of the game, no one's going to say this was the Sam Darnold win.
By the way, here's my hipster moment for the Ravens 2000 offense.
Okay.
They had one of the greatest left tackles of all time. Mm-hmm. They had one of the greatest tight ends.
Jonathan Ogden.
Jonathan Ogden, left tackle. Sharp at tight end. And their running back, Jamal Lewis, would go for over 2,000 yards the following season. Yes, that wasn't a great offense. And Trent Dilfer was a C-level quarterback. That offense wasn't as horrible as you think, and maybe I'm only saying that because they beat the Giants in the Super Bowl.
One of my favorite nerd moments for you with football was tell the story about how excited you were Jonathan Ogden on draft night and watching his footage.
Oh, my God. There was one play. He was like left tackle. I think it was like UCLA versus USC, and he pulls, and he pancakes an end, and then I think he knocked away a linebacker. It was so incredible watching this one play, because it wasn't like he took down one defensive lineman and then hit a safety. Now, these were two very large men that Ogden dominated.
It's like when Andre the Giant used to take on 12 little people at the Keswick Arena.
Yep.
Which was something I had the option to see as a kid. All right, I want to talk a little bit about New England because they're fascinating and there's nothing quite like who do we blame?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do we blame, let's start here. Do we blame the fact that we thought anybody thought they could win based on the playoff run they had to get there and Seattle's playoff run to get there? Like, was it just the formality of creating an argument for this team when they clearly weren't as good as Seattle?
I think there was a lot of wish casting that was going on there.
Is that
what
they call it? Wish casting?
Yeah, wish casting, or I don't know, whatever the kids are calling it. But yeah, I think there was definitely people were like, no, it's going to be a good game. It's like Homer Simpson with the pig. It's like, no, it's still good. It's still good. It's just a little wet. Everyone wanted it to be a good game. And you could make the argument, Mike Vrabel's an incredible coach. Drake May came second to Matt Stafford by one vote for the MVP. So you got the great coach, you got a very good defense, and you got a quarterback that can beat blitzes, can be mobile, and one of the best scramblers, and can throw deep. And so that's why people were going into the game going, ignoring the strength of schedule.
Drake May was so bad. I can't remember a quarterback looking that bad at this level of game, particularly if they were the actual starter. You could argue maybe a backup came in and didn't particularly do great. But
yeah.
And the fact that he was an MVP candidate and came so close to actually winning was astonishing. Can you remember a star being this bad on this big a stage?
Rich Gannon won the MVP as the quarterback for the Raiders, and they got dominated by the 2001 Buccaneers. That one comes to mind. That may be the best one I can think of.
And now, I know Drake May is a kid, but he was still also second in MVP voting and was...
He looked lost.
Like, so lost. Did you start to feel bad for him? I mean, yeah. I didn't because I hate the Patriots.
Mm-hmm. I felt bad for him. And you know, his weapons weren't that great. And I think the clock on Stephon Diggs is up. And I imagine Stephon Diggs is... He's got a busy life coming up ahead of him if you've been following his private life.
Oh, he's in the Trump situation where he's just trying to keep his job so that he doesn't have to go to jail as soon as it's up.
Yeah, and alimony. A lot of alimony coming. but it's not like they had great weapons. The left side of the offensive line was horrible. So it wasn't all on Drake May, but May missed a lot of passes. Drake May was lousy in that Super Bowl, full stop, and it'll we now will go back to look at the strength of schedule.
Okay, so now I want to talk about Drake May, because this is almost like he's the center of a wheel and all the spokes are coming from it. And I'm trying to figure out which spokes belong there and which ones don't. Mm-hmm. We've skirted the topic of the, we danced around the topic of the left tackle, Will Campbell. He wasn't very good.
Nope.
Was it a mistake to keep him in there in the position he was in and not maybe start cycling him out and bringing in a backup more? Was that a roster mistake? Because he was having like the kind of bad night. I don't think that a left tackle has ever been beaten that much in terms of allowing quarterback pressure. They were saying statistically in the history of the Super Bowl. At some point, you kind of have to say this guy's not cutting it and it's causing havoc back there, don't you?
Yes. And maybe it's not even replacing him. Maybe it's putting another tight end over there, get another
back. Do something. Scheme for it.
Screen passes, something to slow down the pass rush. And it never, ever happened. So, yeah, like the failings go on everyone on that. First on the quarterback, then on the protection, then on the coach.
Did it get uncomfortable that Josh McDaniels wasn't calling the game differently after a certain point? Like, I know he's this brilliant guy and everybody thinks that he's, you know, he's the genius behind the offense. But it felt like you felt this, didn't you? That it just got like uncomfortable for the broadcasters to say this might be the worst called game in history.
And they don't want to do that, because they're still trying to sell the game, and that was very difficult. By the way, Bob, we're now going to take a quick pause.
Oh, is it time?
I am doing a hit with CTV News in 90 seconds. So I will do a quick hit. I'm going to hit pause. You can watch the magic of me being a gas bag for a 5-minute hit.
All right. Well, let me throw out this tease so people come back on the other side of the hit.
Yeah.
You are going to lay blame. You're going to stack rank who you think belongs in hell today.
Oh, I love it. That's coming up next. Who's going to hell? And we are back. It is time for me to send people to hell. So, Bob, were you impressed with my TV hit that I just did for CTV?
I was impressed that you promoted Macoin Cause.
Yeah.
I haven't heard any. What's that buzzing sound, Matt?
That's someone doing construction. Oh, no, that's elevator. The one, as you know, it takes you longer to get up here. They're rebuilding one of the elevators right now.
Ah, so that buzzing is just building renewal.
Building renewal. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Let's stack rank who's going to hell.
Hold on a second, though. The fact that you've never heard that whenever I do a TV hit, they mention the Macoin Cause podcast, which, by the way, brought to you by Jeff Pollock, jeffpollock.com, Jeff with a G. When you need legal help, he helps us. He can and he will help you. That means you've never heard or seen any of my TV hits over the years, Bob. That gets mentioned all the time.
I don't support my friends.
That's fair. That's fair. Jeff Merrick and I, we get together once a week and we just shit talk you like crazy. You know, I was all over during the Blue Jays playoff run. People were like, I can't stop seeing you on the TV. Anyway.
CP24, that's television, right?
Yes, that is. That is traditional television, Bob. The world that we came from.
Yeah.
You took a remote control and you did a scroll up and down on the TV.
That's true. And it pays the bills in my house because my wife works for CBC television.
That's right. And don't make me do a defund the CBC hashtag.
Yeah, because that's what we all need. That'll get the TTC moving faster. All right.
What are we ranking?
Drake May, Josh McDaniels, Will Campbell, Mike Vrabel. Stack rank them in terms of who's in football hell today and deserves to be there.
Number one is going to be Drake May. It still goes to the quarterback to execute the plays. I'm going to start with him. I will go with... who's number two? I'll go. Oh, you know what? Vrabel 2, McDaniels 3, Campbell 4. Campbell is the rookie, and it's up to the people around him to try to make his life a little bit easier.
I'm going
to
say Josh McDaniels first, only because in the fourth quarter, once Drake May kind of settled in, you saw that they were starting to move the ball.
And they weren't blitzing. But Seattle wasn't blitzing. By that point, they just said, do what you want.
I understand. But his arm was working, like he had some zip on the ball. So as much as you and I and everybody have speculated, is this an injury?
Yeah.
That he could still throw the ball. But as we mentioned before, you know, you got and did your hit, they didn't run him. He's got good legs. They were rushing four, Seattle was, and they never got Drake May out of the pocket. They never threw screens. They never did anything. Like, it was such... Vrabel and Josh McDaniels, and I guess you can decide between the two of them who's more responsible for this, but
yeah.
Third and five, rush Stevenson. Fourth and two, don't go for it. They were playing so incredibly conservatively. Even when they were losing, it's like they... they didn't have any trust that this guy could complete a play. And so they gave him almost nothing to do, and he did nothing.
The adjustments weren't there. If you want to blame it on the coaches first, I would look at New England's first series of the second half. It's like, all right, you got an extra long, you have an extra long halftime, and they went three and out. And it just, their offense looks so lifeless on those first three plays. And it's like, really? That's it? That's what you drew up? Like, if you want to go in the coaches first, and I see the argument for it, I would look at that first possession.
It's the classic Ned Flanders parents line. Mm-hmm. We've tried nothing, and we're all out of ideas.
Oh, man, he's a real Squaresville.
I was so unimpressed with the way they approached that game. I get it. Like, I watched Drake May sail over guys, and he looked bad. But shit, let the guy run a little bit. Get him into the game. Just do something.
The funny thing is, Drake May looked like Sam Darnold when Sam Darnold was a rookie taking on the New England Patriots when Darnold was a Jet.
That's a pretty nice historical reference there. You know what I wanted to ask you about before we move on? And I still want to talk about Bad Bunny.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting weekend for New England for me, not because of the game or what we think they're going to be moving forward. I think the AFC can breathe a collective sigh of relief that this does not feel like a juggernaut, and maybe it was just a fortuitous year that got them into the big game.
Oh, I'm going to push back on that.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Well, let's push back now, because my point's more of a macro one anyway.
They're going to need to find another weapon or two for Drake May. Mm-hmm. But I think that's easier to find the way passing games are in college. It's easier to find wide receivers. Jackson Smith and Jigba was drafted 20th overall. Actually, he was the first wideout. Another point for John Schneider. And by the way, again, it's a bad Super Bowl when you talk about the GMs this much. But I think New England, I think next year, they could be a better team with a worse record. Because the schedule's going to get harder. Mm-hmm. But you have the coach, and Mike Vrabel's an excellent coach. McDaniels is a very good offensive coordinator. I don't think they're going anywhere. So I think you're going to have coaching stability. I think Drake May can get better. He's still like 23, 24 years old. And they did so well in free agency and the guys they brought in that I actually think New England will win 10 to 11 games next year, but they could be a better team.
So I don't know what their free agency situation is. So
shame on you for not knowing.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't know who's staying and who's going. But every year in sports, there's a team that overperforms. They have this magical window to the top.
Washington, the Commanders last year versus this year.
That's actually who I was thinking of. Yeah. And everyone was like, well, Washington's here and they're here to stay. And that was not true.
Nope.
Jaden Daniels is going to be, you know, the next Robert Griffin, you know, the third, except he's not going to get hurt. Except he did get hurt. And they're not here to stay.
Yeah.
So when I look at it, and you made this case the whole playoffs long, was they had a pretty easy schedule. They never really beat anyone good, even during the regular season.
Yeah. One win over Buffalo. That was their best one.
Yeah. And Buffalo proved very beatable at various times. And if you caught them on the wrong day or the right day, they're just going to beat themselves. So I'm not sure what we saw that confirms that they're actually good. They didn't beat anybody good in the playoffs. They never had two good halves back to back, and they had a lot of things break their way, and then they made it to the big game and looked absolutely and utterly outclassed.
Yeah, they could easily be the Washington of 2026. If you want to push back on that, I would say Mike Vrabel is a better head coach than what they have in Washington. Washington also was the oldest team in football in terms of average age. Versus what else? So in terms of average age, of course it's average age. What else would it be? That was such a bad, just filler line by me. And also Drake May's at least sturdier than Jaden Daniels.
Okay. You have to bet. What's your favorite bottle of wine that you have in the house right now?
Favorite bottle I have right now, I'm going to go 2009 Alter Ego from Margaux.
Okay. You have to put that on the line and pick either New England or Houston next year to make the final. Who do you take?
Ooh, okay. That's a good bottle of wine, Bob. That bottle of wine sings with the Merlot. Anyway, no, I'm not going to do my wine douchebaggy thing. Okay, Houston has the better defense. Houston will have Nico Collins fully healthy, Dalton Schultz. C.J. Stroud is good. Drake May's better than C.J. Stroud. I think the coaching is slightly better in New England. Let's see. Ooh, that's a good question. New England's going to have a harder schedule. The AFC It's the Colts. It's the Gin. Colts are going to be shit. I will go with Houston by one more win.
And let's say we play the same game, but take out Houston and put in Denver.
Probably Denver.
Okay, so I've thrown out three teams, and you put New England as the last of three that are likely to make it back to the big game.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying there's a collective sigh of the exhale, the sigh of relief, because they don't look dominant. I'm sure they'll be good. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they'll continue to improve, but we're not looking at the beginning of a juggernaut. If I'm in the NFC West and I'm looking at Seattle, I'm more worried about Seattle than I am if I'm Buffalo and I'm looking at New England.
Agreed. I think New England takes a step back, but at the very least, what they have is stable ownership, because eventually Kraft will go to his son, who's been doing it for ages. You got stable owner, great coach, and excellent young quarterback. You can build on that. But I do think New England absolutely takes a further step back. And I would, and because there's the big thing is the schedule. Okay, what do you look like when you've got a high end schedule? So we'll find out more. But yes, I think Houston, I would take Houston and Denver.
You and I have found a way to make this game way more interesting than it deserves.
The game was horrible.
It's just a piece of shit. You know what I thought was the most interesting thing, and to go back to the macro point I was going to make? It was such a bad weekend for Tom Brady, Robert Kraft, and Bill Belichick.
Oh, yeah.
The brain trust / talent trust of maybe the greatest franchise in any sport in the last 50 years. And the three most important figures, talk about who's going to hell. Both of them, like all three of them, are a collective joke right now.
Yeah, it was a very, very bad weekend. Kraft doesn't get into the Hall of Fame. Jordan is wearing a shirt making fun of the massage parlor that Kraft was in. There's Epstein file stuff. There's Tom Brady finally saying, I'm rooting for New England, and he does it on Instagram, and Belichick doesn't get in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, very tough weekend for all things New England football.
It was really interesting because it was such a great team, and all three of them were considered so superior at their individual positions. It got me to thinking about a conversation we had last week or a couple weeks ago about the unlikability of great players, and how when you think about hockey, the greatest player who ever lived is Wayne Gretzky, and he's an asshole. When you think about basketball, the greatest player who ever lived is Michael Jordan, and he's a total prick. And now in football, I think you can make the case Tom Brady's the best player of all time. Certainly deserves to be two or three. And he's just insufferable.
And certainly in the case of Brady and Jordan, not exactly great husbands. At least Wayne's been with the say. I don't know. I don't know what goes behind the scenes.
Yeah, who knows if he's a good husband?
I don't know.
But he's certainly not a good Canadian.
But at the very least, but I'm saying, but to that point, two of those three, multiple divorces and stepping out, especially when their partners are pregnant or with young children.
It made me think how much I want Sidney Crosby to win this gold medal, because Sidney Crosby is the best player of alive over the last 15 years in his career. He's been the best hockey player during that span. And there's no reason to hate that guy.
Yeah. Well, we need.
I don't think he's Wayne Gretzky great. I don't think he's Mario Lemieux great or Bobby Orr great. But he's in the top 10 probably ever.
Yeah.
And God, he's just so easy to like. And he hasn't done anything to let us down.
And just go away when you're done, Crosby.
Don't even talk to anybody.
Don't endorse some sort of medical miracle that'll help with concussions. Don't do anything like that. Just go live your life and on a pond or something.
I was thinking about how we really need to buff up an alternative greatest of all time conversation that includes character. Because Kareem is top five.
Yeah.
And Kareem is a great human being and one of the top five players who ever lived. Bill Russell's up there, too.
Yep.
I think, Muhammad Ali is not the best boxer of all time in terms of his skill.
Yeah.
He is one of the best boxers of all time, but you can say that it's Sugar Ray Robinson. You can say that it's Joe Louis. There are others who have a better claim to the title of the GOAT, but it's Ali's legacy in addition to his excellence. It's the narrative that he lived through with all of his, trials and the obstacles that he faced. That's what really makes him the GOAT. When we say he's the GOAT, what we mean is nobody's been more important. Not nobody's better. Nobody's been more important.
Yeah.
I feel like every sport needs a bit more of that. Like you can, it's almost the difference between the MVP and the MOP. You know how the CFL has the most outstanding player?
They do it right, Bob. They do it right over there.
Right. I feel like let the great players be the MVPs. They're the most valuable to their team, but outstanding has a moral dimension to it.
The one thing of interest here is the disadvantage that today's players have over the past ones is social media. Maybe Bill Russell was an asshole and was horrible that we don't know about. Maybe Muhammad Ali, like, and the thing is, everything about Bill Russell is what an incredible person. You know, same thing with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, even though not exactly the most liked among his teammates, kind of a bit of a dick. But to your point, the character on a historic, bigger picture level is awesome. The only advantages they have is whatever dirty laundry that may or may not have been there, we'll never know.
Muhammad Ali could never have been the same guy if it was now. One, because I don't know what his relationship with his wife, but I get the impression it was maybe, you know, situations were negotiable.
You know, Muhammad Ali was Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy.
He's on the road again.
But also his connection to the Nation of Islam. Mm-hmm. And just there's no way that he would be as loved today. Yep. And that his detractors would be seen as, you know, kind of outside of the mainstream. He would be too contentious today. Maybe not, but I just feel like he would be.
I'm just saying the degree of difficulty, it's a little bit easier on the character conversation when it was from someone from the 60s.
But isn't that what makes Sidney Crosby so great? I mean, he's been outstanding since Twitter was invented.
There's nothing. There's like literally nothing on him. You can go after LeBron for LeBron taking down Daryl Morey for Daryl Morey, you know, questioning what was going on in China. Like if you want to do that, if you want to get into the morality dance, you could do it even with LeBron, who's built schools and charity and has done so much incredible work. But yeah, with Crosby. Crosby's about as clean and as been invisible and unknown as it gets.
There was footage on the CBC of them walking in the men's hockey team into the Olympic Village, and they're all wearing their outfits and they're smiling, and I looked at Crosby and he just has a big grin on his face, and I thought, I love this guy.
Yeah,
I love this guy.
Just happy fella,
just you know? Excellent just at his job.
Yeah,
you know, he wins. He sounds like a great teammate. He stayed with the same team, which in sports is like staying with your first wife, mm-hmm. even after you get famous.
We know that he's married, but you have to work for it.
Is he married?
He is, but that's the point. You have to work for it. I always like to play this game on a slow news day and just play the hits. And by like, what can you tell? Like, because Sidney Crosby it's remarkable. He's the most important athlete for providing sports happy for the nation of Canada, you know, for the last 15 years. And we know so little about him.
This is why I like the Bad Bunny halftime so much. Mm. And there was a political element to it that I thought was deserved and interesting. And you know, we can parse that and do our deep dive into the symbolism of it. But more than anything, it was really just a joyful performance.
Yep.
That was fun to watch and filled with color and engagement. And
it was so well done visually.
It looked a little bit like remember for a while there, they were putting Broadway plays on TV.
Yes.
It looked like a play on TV. It didn't look like a concert. It looked like a show.
They were trying to do Hamilton, but you know, through the POV and the life of Bad Bunny.
As somebody who's been part of live events and watching how they put together
they're hard.
Like honest to God, the degree of orchestration that they managed to pull off, just astonishing. But even more than that, I loved how when they were going through just Puerto Rican culture and they went to the wedding, and by the way, the couple
that was a real wedding, that was
just like so cute. It's funny. I don't see how you could watch that and say this has no family values. Well, yeah, they were getting married, but whatever. But it was even just like there were old people in it, there were kids in it, and it was
very inclusive.
It was so inclusive. It also reminded me of the weddings I went to as a kid. Like, I'm not Puerto Rican, I'm Ukrainian, but I think there's a certain kind of like there was an authenticity to it in that it was multi-generational, and it just felt fucking happy.
Yeah.
You know, it just felt happy. And it was so, and then of course, like Jake Paul immediately afterwards, this is an American, and Donald Trump, like, you know, how dare they? And you know what? They sound like assholes, because it was just fucking fun to watch. And what it really hit me as is this line of joy is resistance. You know, I started off wanting to fight Olivia Chow over the TTC, but one of the reasons we do this pod is because it's important to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, I could spend 23 hours a day talking about politics and worrying about our future, and I do. But in this hour, we just try to enjoy sports, because if you stop enjoying stuff, you're cooked.
Yeah.
And Bad Bunny was just a thing that was hard not to enjoy unless you went into it and said, I hate this guy and I'm not going to like this. And who cares what those people think?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't care what a lot of people think. I think there's people like the only thing that bothers me is I thought the show, as we said, brilliant. And the degree of difficulty, which is one of the most common themes on this, nailed it. Like it was easy.
The degree of difficulty was like, it was like that guy who's like the figure skater doing the backflip.
Yeah. Oh my God. Now in terms of the music, it's not for me. You know, I actually found the music kind of boring, and part of it is I couldn't understand what they're saying. And I've said the same thing about Eddie Vedder. Or even almost any live concert. If I'm like, because I like to hear the lyrics. I'm like, oh, what's going on? Like, so, but it was great to watch. In the end, I was like, oh yeah, nice job. And then I moved on. Like, just from the music side, because I don't go to clubs and things like that. But I thought they nailed it. The only thing that bothers me is when someone goes, if you don't like that show, you're racist. No, it doesn't mean you're racist. It means, you know, let's have a conversation. That's the only thing I don't like. And by the way, that's not even really real.
But
that's just social media.
I was going to say,
you know what?
That point of view is as legitimate as the I refuse to like this because it's not the America I want to see.
Yeah, which is dumb. Puerto Rico's part of America. All those people there, they're
Americans.
That's
the weirdest thing about it was I read this great thing online. That somebody, you know, Bad Bunny holds up the ball and it's like, together we are American or whatever it said on the ball.
Yeah.
And someone just wrote, I'd like to see someone explain how this is un-American.
Yeah, I know. It's so dumb. It's so bad
faith. It's so dumb.
I hate the bad faith of it. Just like I said, and again, it's Twitter, so I shouldn't even comment. But someone's like, if you say you don't, you didn't understand Bad Bunny or Kendrick Lamar, then you're a racist. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like that sentiment, I'm like, okay, I feel like you're going a little bit farther.
But people go out looking for racism. And so everything is a nail if you're a hammer, as they say.
Yeah. Like me and my friends were like, oh, yeah, that was well done. Wait, are we really liking it? No, but hey, there it is. All right.
Just as a show, I love the ebullience of it. It was just so much freaking fun. And it's funny because then when we went to the game afterwards and they started dissecting what was going to happen in the second half, the energy just dropped.
Oh, no one cared. I mean, no one cared. Like,
The game where fun went to die.
Oh, yeah. Well, you saw the hit I did with CP24. They're like, all we've been doing is talking about Bad Bunny. Maybe we should actually talk about the football game.
Irrelevant, though.
Yeah.
Just a completely forgettable game. You know what I really got from this, though? Because I'm watching the Olympics and I'm watching the Super Bowl. And I'm thinking about how more and more sports only matter if it's an event. How I watched yesterday and that game just meant nothing. It was completely, unless you're a Seattle fan or a New England fan, even if you're just a football fan, I'm not sure what you got out of it. It was so relevant to very few. Anyway, my point is sort of this. It made me think about how the regular season's dying. And you and I have talked about this a lot. But how more and more sports is just about some big event that you can goose up to make people care. Because the game itself is almost irrelevant. I'm not talking about that game. I'm talking about sports in general, games in general. Are almost irrelevant. People don't care about the quality of the game anymore. They care about hot takes. They care about betting spreads. It's all the stuff around the game. But the actual game has become increasingly disposable. Last night's Super Bowl was as disposable a football game. You know, take the stakes out of it. But just the game itself was absolutely irrelevant.
My opening thought today is actually about how the importance of the Super Bowl is it just gives you an excuse to hang out with friends. And when you get older, when you get older, it's harder to see your friends. People have married kids, they move away. It's one thing I love at the Super Bowl. All my friends who I've known, some since the 80s, we all get to hang out with each other.
Okay, so let me throw this back at you because I agree, but I actually think that's bad for sports.
Oh, yeah.
Because in the past, like when you were a baseball fan and you grew up with a dad who was very closely connected to the game, right? And so you saw baseball as someone who loved the daily and weekly and monthly progression of it. And the game itself was something that was always thought about and felt as a game. Increasingly, the actual games don't matter. People, like even kids today, they don't really watch the games in the same way that they don't read books anymore. They take too long, and everything that you kind of want to get out of it is just the information that comes from it. The hot takes, particularly the gambling, fantasy. It's almost irrelevant, the actual game itself. And I watched last night and I thought, you know, sports is going to get to a point where it's going to be like, the first thing is it's going to become indistinguishable from Jake Paul against Mike Tyson. It's just, what's a sensation? But then eventually it's going to be, what's the difference between Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, and a guy climbing a skyscraper?
Oh, Alex Honnold.
Right? Fascinating, but also a reason to all sit around the TV and talk about it. Like, it's now, it's the event. It's not the game that holds us together. The game is a community. The event is a spike
in attention. My pushbacks is, well, one, everyone, like, your relationship with sport is different now than what it was in the past. But then that's the case for everyone. The ratings would say everyone still cares. You know, like, the ratings for live sports are still remarkable.
But they're down.
Yeah. Well, they're down because there's so many other options.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like, no, they still matter, but they matter in a world where everything matters less.
I think the big concern that all leagues are going to have is how to keep young people watching for the whole block of time versus just watching, as you say, hot take clips, or just watching one or two plays on Twitter, on YouTube, or Twitch, wherever people are getting their content. I think that is the big concern, because I could still list all the great NFL regular season games, but I do agree with you that there is the importance of the regular season doesn't feel the same. And I think you find that the most in basketball for a variety of reasons.
If I don't love the game, mm-hmm. then there's not much difference between the Super Bowl and a guy climbing a skyscraper.
Yeah.
And the Bad Bunny, the fact that that was far and away the best part of the game, was an indication that I'm just there to talk about stuff. The football is just an afterthought. And football's in a different category because people love football in America.
Yeah.
But most of the other sports, I don't think people really care that much.
I think they do. But we have such different relationships with fans. Like, your view of the sport fan versus me, we view it very differently.
Well, and because you talk to super fans. World. Because your core constituents are all super fans. Like, who else is listening to sports radio? Mm-hmm. But even that has changed, because when you and I did it together, we never talk gambling.
Yeah.
Never.
No.
And now half of your broadcast day is talking about gambling, which is not about the sport. It is about the secondary information around the sport.
Well,
it doesn't matter what happens in the game as long as you guessed it right.
Yeah, well, I would say for me, I take all the gambling stuff and actually just turn it into content.
Sure, like, that's you.
But today is going to be Drake and Kendall Jenner losing $1 million on the Super Bowl.
Sure, but you're having fun with it. But you can't deny the fact that even when you watch SportsCenter, like, half of it is...
It's definitely a lot more, yeah.
100%. No, it's not more. It is the most important thing.
Well, that's because, you know...
That's where the money comes from.
People need to get paid.
Right, but if people... Like, when you and I grew up, we were in the sweet spot of TV debate.
Yes.
Pioneered by... Pardon the Interruption, mm-hmm. and then Around the Horn, and, you know, you and I worked on Off the Record.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of great sports debate. People tuned in because they wanted to hear the best conversations about the game, and they made the game better. Mm-hmm. And over the years, that has drifted away to where we're not even having discussions about the game anymore.
If the Super Bowl was the NFC Championship game, then we would have said the game and Bad Bunny matched each other. That they matched each other in terms of entertainment, in terms of storylines, in terms of aesthetic.
I don't disagree, but I would say that if you look at the arc of an entire sports year, there's almost no reason to care except for the events.
For you, I think sport. Well, it depends. I mean, look how much the city of Toronto cared about every Blue Jay game, because the team was winning.
Well, once the stakes were up, but mm-hmm. how much did they care in May?
I mean, when the stakes go up, everyone cares more. But it's still
100%. But what I'm saying is, it's getting harder. Like, that's the whole point about stakes. That's why I bring up the guy climbing the building. Mm-hmm. This is an event.
You're not going to get higher stakes, by the way.
It really is. It is literally the highest.
Yeah, and if anyone hasn't seen Free Solo, the documentary, it's brilliant and terrifying.
We used to watch every game because we loved sports. Mm-hmm. And now it's getting harder and harder to do that because there are so many more of them. And we also didn't have every game to watch back in the day. You remember what it was like watching hockey, and you would see it on a Wednesday and you would see it on a Saturday?
Yeah. And what made it bigger, when you saw a game you didn't normally get to see. Having every game on does take away a little bit of it, because it's about supply and demand.
Right. And we have nothing but supply. Mm-hmm. We're in this apex capitalist system where everything is just rammed down your gullet all the time at muzzle speed. Mm-hmm. And it's made everything meaningless. So in order to stand out, you have to have these incredible stakes, which does happen from time to time, or you have to make things an event. And what constitutes an event is getting harder and harder to actually punch through. And it's
But I think it depends on your level of sports fandom. Like for me, you know, when Jokic came back, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay, a Denver game. I want to catch some of it just to see. I want to see what that looks like.
And what I would say is those kinds of fans are in fewer and fewer supply these days.
I would not disagree with that.
And so that's why I'm saying when I watched last night's Super Bowl, I'm thinking the football is mattering less and less. Not just in that game, but just in general. Football being in a special category in America because it really is loved. But in general, there's just... it's ubiquitous. You don't need to watch anymore. I listen to more podcasts about sports than the time I spend watching sports.
Yeah.
I feel like that's pretty typical.
Typical is like over 50% of the population?
I don't know. Let's say that if you were going to... I don't know how to make a number up out of it, mm-hmm. but I don't feel like what I'm doing is rare.
No.
I probably listen to... over the course of a week, I probably watch about, I don't know, 10 hours of sports or whatever.
I think we're going to have different opinions on this just because there are different lifestyles. Also, your father.
Yeah, but you work in sports.
Yeah, I work in sports.
It's totally different. Yeah, I'm talking about like my experience out there in the real world is people keep a general arm's length mm-hmm. understanding of what's going on, but they love to gamble.
Yeah, it's funny. I work, a show sponsored by FanDuel, and all my friends are sports fans. We almost never talk gambling. The only gambling we talked yesterday was a goofy $5 bet I had on the Super Bowl. And then, you know, and that was sort of just a fun subplot as we were debating which dessert to have.
So let's talk about fun quickly because Bad Bunny was fun and yep. we're not sure that sports are fun. Cathal Kelly wrote an article about Auston Matthews having fun with the Olympic team. Have you seen it yet?
I have not.
For the Globe and Mail. It was basically a where'd this fun guy come from? They just had footage of Matthews at practice and he's laughing and yucking up. And then he's talking to the reporters after the practice and he's engaged and he's extemporizing. He's just shooting the shit with them and having a chat. And he seems to be having a ball. And he's like, God, this is like the total opposite of what you see with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I wanted to throw this out to you. Should we care more about Auston Matthews' happiness?
Ooh. Well, but my first thought was, should the media treat hockey the way when you're going out on a hike and you see a deer? It's like quiet, don't upset it. Don't upset it. Let's get a little closer. Oh, it's beautiful. No, don't step on that twig. If it hears a noise, it'll run away. Like maybe that's it. It's like Matthews gets to hang out with some of the best, and he's not surrounded by 25 reporters every day asking what the hell happened on your power play.
It's really hard to be happy in Toronto unless you're winning. Mm-hmm. And that's true of all big markets and all teams that have important teams. I don't think the Patriots are having a fun day today.
No.
You know, but Boston loves its sports.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a badge of honor to be a bit of an asshole as a fan. It shows you care. It's weird, but there's some truth to that. The irrationality is just part of it. I want to read you something that I texted our good friend Jonas Siegel this morning because he wrote an article and he did a kind of a ranking of who are the most untouchable trade prospects for the Leafs. And untouchable was Auston Matthews.
Yeah.
And here's what I responded via text. You'll probably hear it before he does. I think this is where I break with the conventional wisdom with holding on to Matthews no matter what. It's true, you can't win without a 1C. It is at least as true, you can't win without a true 1D. And the Leafs are nowhere near having that. They also don't have a 2D or a real 3D. The D is old and slow and all signed, and it's near impossible to see them improving next year. Even if you flipped a couple of them, who would you get that would impact winning immediately with 2 to 5 of these same guys still back there next year? It's not a championship window, in my opinion, because you have a great center. And will he still be great by the time you've built around him again, especially with his declining output? If you had to bet 10K and absolutely had to, who is more likely to have 30 goals for the Leafs in 3 to 4 years, 34 or 88? Take contracts and health into account. Who would you put that $10,000 on? That was my text to him.
I have a question.
So let's dissect that.
Okay, we will. We got like 3 minutes left.
Okay.
But I just have to ask, did you type that all on your phone?
Yeah.
You're a good typer. I could never type something that long. I would type it on Microsoft Word on my laptop, and then I would cut and paste it. I would Hotmail email it to myself, and then I would cut and paste it into a text on my phone. That is great typing by you, Bob.
Well, thank you. But I send long texts to people because it's like I'm talking to them.
Uh-huh. Are you doing the voice to text?
I type.
Wow, that's good.
You should see my daughter, honestly.
I expect that from her generation.
It's unbelievable. Have you ever seen those pictures of lizards that are running across the top of the water surface?
Yeah.
That's her texting. It's like her fingers barely even touch the surface.
Oh, my God. To answer your question, if we're taking health into account, William Nylander.
Yeah, which is crazy, right? So when we talk about it's a championship window because we have Austin Matthews, and we don't even think he's the most likely to be the highest scorer in 3 years on his own team. Mm-hmm. So I just don't see it. And then I also added, because you know how you always put the text after the first one, because you have one more thing you got to add and you forgot. I said, it's a gamble, but they're absolutely not roster building from a position of strength. Now, it sounds crazy, but I do all I could to poach McDavid.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
I think we just got to like fucking move past this team and think, okay, cheer against Edmonton. I know you said you wanted to cheer for them because it's fun to see Canadian teams do well. But cheer against Edmonton and make it absolutely, absolutely clear the destination for him should be here.
Yeah, but the thing is for that, you know what you're going to need? You're going to need a better defense. I think you'll have the goaltending.
But you would have a better defense if you traded Matthews.
Yes, you would. If you traded Matthews and built up the defense.
And kept some of that salary cap space instead of paying Nick fucking Schmaltz, save some of it and give it to McDavid.
It's a great, 100%. But you got to make sure McDavid, because if he leaves, you've got to make sure that he's got to make sure I can go somewhere that has a better team to win than the one I'm just leaving.
I don't understand the philosophy that says we don't have enough, but we have to hang on to it because we'll have even less if we do.
So, Bob, this could be the last pod for the next 3.5 weeks.
Really? You're going to Australia, right?
I'm going to Australia, and then I'm going to New Zealand. We're leaving on Saturday.
That's really something, Matt. Yeah. Well, I hope you have a good time. A lot of shark stuff down there, so be careful when you're swimming.
Only in Australia. New Zealand is great. Nothing can hurt you in New Zealand.
Yeah, perfect. Is New Zealand filled with deadly animals? Because like it seems like Australia is, but I never hear that about New Zealand.
No, they don't. They have like none. It's like basically living in southern Ontario. It's so strange. There's nothing that can kill you there.
Is it like Canada compared to the States where you go into Australia and it's crazy animals? It's like they all have guns.
Yeah.
But then you go to New Zealand and everyone votes NDP.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
It's just sheep and socialists.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And maybe some bad bunnies.
Chick-chicka.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.